Session number 220-81, rule 2.
Mr. Gray, rule 2. Right, Mr. Gray, so you did your initial training, your 3 months period. Could you just describe how you got to be trained as a signaller, how that happened?
Well, we got the choice of going in the MT or the signals, you know, a group being square bashing sort of thing. And fancied the signal sort of thing. That's because some of my mates did, you know. Because I was a good mate of Frankie Reynolds then, sort of thing. You know.
And who was Frank Reynolds?
He was finished up a corporal, didn't he?
And he was with you in the DLI?
That's right, yeah.
Later on. So it was really a choice of the individual soldier. You could have chosen not to have gone to the signal.
Oh, yeah.
Was there any kind of aptitude test that they put you through for the signals?
I think it did before we had the chance to... Before they give us a choice to be going to singles or the MT, I think they went through a sort of test, you know, to see if you were up here sort of thing, you know, I don't know.
So, about how big was your training squad that you'd gone through this?
In the signals?
No, but before you got to the signals, the...
About 30.
And how many of those 30 went to the signals, do you think?
Between 8 and 12.
And where would the others have gone to?
Went empty, or else they went back and, you know, in the squad on the square sort of thing.
Was there anybody in the squad that that wasn't up to scratch that had to be kind of, you know, or did everybody get through it?
Well, I don't think everybody passed it. We had to read the Morse at 10 words a minute, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't think everybody done it, you know, mastered it. Because mm-hmm. It was a bit difficult, really, unless you, you know. Mm-hmm.
Just to talk about that in detail, so you were selected for signals training. Could we just go through what they actually had to teach you as a signaller, the different aspects of being a signaller?
Well, we had a bit of blackboard stuff to start with, you know, and then it was the telephone and lining, wasn't it? And then we had the flags and the Morse code and the heliograph.
Could you just describe what you would have to do with the telephone? That would be a field telephone, wouldn't it?
I was to lay the line out, sort of thing. It was a difficult job, you know. So
we're talking about the different aspects of signal training. If we could just go through them, topic by topic. First of all, the telephone and the field telephone. If you could just describe...
A little handset, wasn't it? Yeah, and then... The cable from there to, you know, up the field sort of thing to maybe one of our mates, you know, up there at one end and you this end. The same with the flags, so one here and one, you know, one reading, one sending.
So how long would this line be between the telephones? How long?
What, while we were training?
Yeah.
Oh, from here to about the bottom of our garden. What's how long is that? You could see them anyway, you know, sort of thing. It's just like a big field and...
So that was the telephone. You were still using the signal flags?
That's right, yeah. Semaphore, yeah.
What would that entail?
Well, that was a bit difficult to start with, but I learnt a bit of that. I was in the scouts, you know, boy scouts for a while, you know. But we learned it. We picked it up pretty well, really. One of your mates from one end of the field knew that. You know, that was it.
Can you remember any of the signals and what the different flags would be?
Yes, a bit of got, you know. I don't concentrate too much on that line.
And obviously behind this, would they be teaching you Morse code, I suppose?
Oh, yeah. Did I still remember it. Never leaves you.
And how long did that take for you to become proficient?
Well, 3 months. We had a 3-month course, didn't we?
So it'll be the end of the 3 months before you felt...
That's right. And then we had to pass the test sort of thing to get your cross flags. To... But that was... The Morse code was quite interesting, actually, when you... You know, if you... You got really interested in it. I could read it when I come out of the war, no problem, 10 words a minute, like, you know.
And was there kind of specific radio procedures that they would teach you, you know, specific call signs and so on for different units, or did that come later?
That came, yeah, later on, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. What about the heliograph?
Well, it was a similar sort of thing, but it was a Morse code, really, what you're doing the heliograph, you know. Yeah.
And would they teach you that? I mean, obviously, you would need the sun, I suppose, for it to work.
Oh, you got to have the sun, yeah, obviously, yeah.
So what would they do?
Reflection, you know.
What would they do if you didn't have a sunny day? How would they teach it then?
Ah, now you've got someone, yeah, I can't remember that part. But I say we went through it all and it was interesting, really.
What about radio?
Now, we didn't have the radio then. Not really, no.
So it was old telephone, there was no radio at all. What about the motorbike and dispatch riding? Did that come in at this stage or was that later?
No, that was later on. Mm. I think I was about the Folkestone when I went on the bike.
So there was no, that wasn't part of the signal training?
No, that was a different aspect. Mm-hmm.
So during this period of signal training, at the end of it, you'd be proficient in Morse code?
So, yeah.
What else would you be proficient in?
You had to be proficient a lot to get before you got your cross flags, really. Mm-hmm. You passed the test on the helio and the flags and Morse code, you know. That all, you had to pass a lot, like those, you know, four things really.
And what would the test be if you would just go through? Well, how would they test it?
Well, I say with the Morse code, you had to, I think 10 words a minute was the passing point, like, you know. Some could read it a bit better and some didn't, you know. But 10, you pass at 10 words a minute.
And that was to read and to send, or?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And would they test you on the flags as well?
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about being trained on the flags at this stage? I mean, it's like 1940.
Well, you know, you're still in the old war, like the last war, so I think all the training basics really weren't, you know. But it was so interesting for us, like, you know.
Can you remember the other men that were on the course with you?
Well, I think they're all on one of their pictures, like, quite a lot of them.
And who stands out? That's a photograph that...
I think they were all pretty average. Time. The ones that passed were enough all average, you know, people like... we all got on there as well together, really. Unbelievable.
Now, you've been in the army quite a while now. Did you have any chance to go home on leave?
But when I was at Bedford, I used to bike home to here at the weekends, if I got the weekend off, like, because sometimes we had to do guard duty, obviously, at the weekends, but we had a weekend off. We used to get on, you could get on the bus from Bedford and come to Leighton Buzzard, you know. But I sometimes had a bike, and I used to leave the bike at the digs, where we went. I was pushed, but I kept you fit. I was about 20 miles, sort of thing, but it's nothing when you're a youngster, is it?
Now, you're in the army, you had a civilian job. How did the money compare?
Well, I have 14 shillings. That's all single. If you was married, I think you only had 7. But at Bedford, we used to stand and salute for every Friday, so you are thinking 14 shillings.
And that was the pay parade?
That was it, mate. And I said, I smoke a lot then, of course, obviously, and all mine used to go on faggery.
You did your day's training, your day's square bashing, or your signals course or whatever. How would you fill your time in? Did you have any time off?
We had time off in the evening. So, say if you wasn't on guard, especially when we was in these private digs, so, you know, I used to just walk down the town to Bedford and look over the river and back again, so that was it. We had to be in a certain time, I think it was 10 o'clock or something, you know, perhaps before that. Whatever.
And did your money last? You thought insulin did it last a week?
No, it was a job. Because I say I smoked a lot. And we were nearly always skint before it come to the next week.
Was there any examples of, trouble over money? You know, you borrow money or lend money or was anything?
I say I was never a gambler either, No, I did, apart from me. I've always skint, and you always got a fag from some of the other lads, you know.
Now, what do you think of the quality of the instruction when you were being trained as a signaller?
That chap, the corporal on the same, Gilmore, he was a good chap, good fellow. He was a full corporal, I think. And he was a good teacher. You know, I quite liked that fella, you know.
And
he explained everything, you know, really good.
We'll put that photograph in with your file, with your notes and so on, but look at that squad. There's about how many men are on that photograph, do you think? Of the signal squad, 1940.
What in the...
In the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire.
What, in the first photo? I don't know. That was... I don't know. Must have been 31, 35, right?
And you would be with this group of men all the way through this period of training?
Yeah, unless I say some, you got party because some went to signal, some went to MT, and of course some went, well, stop, you know, and Square Bus and Lennon, you know, stuck the moves up, you know, stripes and all this sort of thing, you know.
Now, you learnt the basics of how to be a signaller. At this stage, did they try to put that into practice by taking you out in exercises?
We had done a lot of exercises, yeah.
Could you describe what a typical exercise would be under when you were being trained?
Well, we used to go out and do exercise in here all the time. We'd go out, you know, route back to somewhere and, you know, around Bedfordshire area. I can't remember much about that, really. But we did do a lot. I know we'd done a lot of exercise. All training exercise, you know, all the time.
Were the officers have made their presence felt at this stage when you're on an exercise?
Yeah, there was some. I said they were lieutenants, I think, then, sort of thing, you know. But there was always officers, whether it was from Lenton or route march or exercising, there was, you know, a full company, like, sort of thing, a sergeant, major, all this. They were all regulars, really, you know.
Could you just describe the process? You know, you mentioned the radio telephone and the laying the line between.
Yeah.
Let's say you're out in an exercise.
Oh, we would lay quite a lot, lay half a mile, perhaps more than that sometimes, you know. Oh, yeah.
And then?
Then somebody would cut it, you know, not, and we had to find out where, you know.
And how would you do that?
Well, we always found it somewhere, you know, but it was broken. We used to do all sorts of things, you know, so we kept a mind on it, and, you know, and we'd follow the cable and find there was a break and repair the break. And well, they told us how to do the reef knot and all this business, joining wires together, you know. That all come into it.
Was it easy to repair a broken line then?
Well, yeah, we just tied a bed and tied it in a reef knot, and because it would never break, you know, you couldn't pull it apart, sort of thing. We was always taught to do a reef knot when we joining the wire together, cable.
Yeah. Was this equipment reliable, the field telephone? Would that be the only fault that you would have, would be the broken...
Really, yeah. And the field telephone, that's all, yeah.
Wouldn't be anything else that would go wrong.
Yeah, no trouble with the phone at all, apart from the cable again. It's the same when we was abroad, you know, the same thing.
Mm. But no radio at all?
None at all,
during this 3 months.
I don't think the 18 sets come in. Oh, North Africa, perhaps, I'm not quite sure. It was a long time coming in, really, but, you know.
Now, in terms of the radio procedure, obviously you've laid this cable between two points to send a message. Would the officer send the message, or would he delegate that to a signaller?
There are always two signallers at each company, you know, all the time. Like, and there was still two at the battalion headquarters and that, you know.
So that was the setup, two of the company, two at the
battalion. That's right, yeah, all around, like, you know. They should be in communication all the time, really, you know. But there are problems abroad, really. The shells used to break the lines and all that sort of thing.
Mm. We'll get to that. Now, in terms of the field telephone, would it mostly be Morse code, even on the field telephone?
Well, we got a little doing it like.
And was there any, at this stage, any attention given to the fact that possibly the enemy could tap into these lines or something? Was there any kind of procedures, precautions against that?
Not really, I don't think. But as soon as they went, somebody had to go out and find the problem, yeah, really. But that was mostly the cable getting broke, yeah.
Mm. Now, can you remember when you qualified as a signaller, when that was?
Well, that was semi paper, didn't it? The date and everything. I don't put that in. Well, that was the...
And we're looking at your paybook now.
Yeah. Classified signal, the 15th of 6, 1940.
So that's the 15th of June,
yeah.
1940.
Then I was an officer 7 from the 8th to the 8th. That must have been in Scotland, see, when we went up to Scotland. And then the 15th of the 8th, I was a signal, that was 1942.
Hmm. So you qualified in Bedford in June 1940.
Yeah.
Now, during this period, there was the Dunkirk episode. How do you remember news of that filtering back to Bedford?
We was at Bedford then because the digs we was in, I said that woman had got a son over in Blanket area, yeah.
And what was her reaction? Can you remember anything about it?
Well, whether we're, you know, were it there sort of thing. But that must have been just the start of Dunkirk, just before Dunkirk, really. Because Dunkirk was about, what, 1942? 1941? No, before then. It must have been late 40s, wasn't it? When Dunkirk was. Because that's where we thought we were going when we got us on the Brigade to go to Scotland.
How did that come about then?
I think when we was at Bedford, Dunkirk hadn't quite happened then, but they were getting pushed back, and there was a lot of recruits were coming in every month at Bedford, and each month total was coming in, an awful lot of people coming in there at Bedford. And when we was on the parade ground, we really thought, we didn't think we was going to Durham's to start with, we thought we were going to Dunkirk, because they were short of men, obviously, just before the Dunkirk happened. Yeah. Because they then put us on the parade ground and we said we've got a former battalion in Scotland. And you could have been anything then, really. Because when we was in Bedford, we talked to these old sweats, they weren't a lot older enough, really, but they'd been in the army since a boy, you know. And of course, none of us liked doing guard duty, it was terrible. And we asked this old sweat, you know, because we've got the choice to be things, and don't get away from that. And he said, if you don't like guards, you don't get so many guards if you're an officer's batman. And when we got on the spray this morning, they said, and they asked us, you know, different things, what you want to be, what you're interested in, all this business. And all you, me and this other fella said, we'll try an officer's batman. And that's what we went to Scotland and done with the. But that was unbelievable at Scotland, because it was up to your neck in mud and we was in bell tents, you know.
Mm. Now, we'll get to that, but just, you're on the parade ground in Bedford, they're telling you you're going to go to Scotland. Did they say it was to another regiment?
No, they said we've got a former battalion, or the 16th Battalion Durham Light Infantry, but he's got to be the nucleus of it, sort of thing, you know.
And what did you think about that?
Well, we never ran into the heads, but Scotland, you know, I thought, well, I'm going back there, not me, like something, you know.
So you were pleased with...
Oh, yes.
What about your fellow Bedton Arts men? Because obviously they were natives of this part.
They wanted to stop in Bedford. A lot of them did, really, yeah. They just didn't like going.
Had you heard of the Durham Light Infantry?
No. Nope.
Had you heard of Durham?
Oh, yeah, I'd heard of Durham, yeah.
So you were pleased to be going to Scotland. What was the general feeling amongst...
Well, a lot of them didn't want to go, obviously, you know. Because a lot... Some of the young lads had got married around this area, and they used to like getting home at weekend sort of thing to see their wives, which is natural, you know. But to be sent away to Scotland, a lot of people didn't like it, really.
Did you get a chance to have a leave before you went up there, or were you posted straight up?
No, we were posted straight up there, yeah.
And about how many men do you think from the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire regiment went?
I don't know, I couldn't really, 50 perhaps a bit more.
And what makeup of men would they be? NCOs and private soldiers?
Some of them were made up NCOs, sort of thing, and they were getting specialised training and, you know, different things, really. You know.
Can you remember the names of the other men? I mean, you've mentioned Frank Reynolds and Jimmy James. Any other men that stand out that went up with you?
Yeah, Vic Hutchison, he's on that 194th, Amp Hill fella. Oh, there was quite a few of them, really. Just remember the names.
So you were posted up to Scotland. Could you just describe that? What happened?
Well, we got to Scotland, and the bell tents, you know, they were just in a field, like, you know. And it was up to your neck in mud, but it was terrible, really, but there you are. And it was worse for the fellas coming in from Brandsmith, because they were coming down with their suits and everything on, and their shoes. And when the mud, honestly, it was up here, like, you know. Because we laid wood down so they can get on the wood to get towards the tent, yeah. It was, you know.
Now, when you arrived, had any of the intakes...
No, not they hadn't arrived. They arrived after we was up there.
So what was the scene when you first got there, 50 men from the Bedton Hearts? Was the camp already laid out? Or had it...
The bell tents were up, sort of thing, you know. But it was just a sea of mud, really, you know. Oh, it was unbelievable. And it was like that for quite a while. But I felt sorry for the chaps coming in from Brandsford, because they're coming in with their suitcases and everything, and, you know...
What was their morale like then?
Oh, terrible, wasn't it? You know, because you know, the shoes on the mud, it was unbelievable. It was really.
Now, you were going to a light infantry regiment.
Yeah.
With a different arms drill, a different marching pace.
Oh, yeah, the marching pace was...
When did they try to... Who told you and taught you how to teach them, as it were?
I think it was Morton Hall, the first place when I first went in there, where the officers were. I think it was Morton Hall. Well, we never got this marching business until, I think, Doug Keith, when we first started it. But then... When we got to, we were still under canvas and up there. And there was no hard ground at all, really, like parade ground. But when we went down south to Folks, I think, first went down, it was because we got barracks there, and we got put through the paces then, and we used to up your shins, you know, get 108 in the minute.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that when we get to that period. So at this stage, when this intake of recruits came in to Scotland, new civilians, what was your job as a trained soldier?
I was a batman.
To the officer?
That's right.
So you had no...
Two officers I looked after at Morton Hall, and they had come from Bransworth, really. And like I hadn't got a clue about that job, really, but I'd got a good idea from these old sweats, you know.
Can you remember who these officers were?
One was Officer Martin, he was. I'm sure he was a Martin, was his name. And I can't really remember the other one. But... Oh. You know, you had a job. They used to send us down to Edinburgh, down Princes Street, to get odds and ends for them, sort of thing. You know, a bottle of scotch, I think most of them had, like, you know. And then we had to clean all their, you know, their dress uniform, you know. But they couldn't really walk about in dress uniform up there because of the mud, you know.
So they were in bell tents as well?
Oh, yeah. There's two officers in a bell tent. Because I looked after two in the bell tent, you know. They used to make their bed and... sort of thing, and clean their gear up and look after them, and they would leave messages for you to used to send us to Edinburgh, but you weren't far away from Edinburgh, to get bits and pieces for them, you know. But they were regular, they come from Bransworth, I'm sure they did, and they were regular people, like, you know.
What do you think of these two men, these two officers?
The what?
What did you think of them?
All right, I got on ever so well, you know, because they used to give us a couple of bob now and again, you know. And they weren't too bad at all.
So
but then I was told, and as best as we could, under the circumstances.
Now, you were batman to these two officers,
yeah.
So did you have any role in relation to the recruits, or did
no, they... not at all, not really, no.
So it was really you were dealing with these
two? I was just dealing with them two officers, more or less, while I was in Edinburgh.
So what were they doing at this point?
They were training, weren't they? They were, they come from Bransworth, and I say that they were regular people, like, you know.
So they were training them?
They were training the intake that was coming in, well, you know, some of them, you know. Mm-hmm. There was quite a lot. All these officers are two in a bell tent, you know, no matter what rank they were, there was two in a bell tent.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's about 50 of you went up.
Yeah.
You were a batman, what were the other better arts men doing, or how were they? Were you, what I'm saying is, were you all together in accommodation, or were you...
We lived in tents as well, like, you know, because there was, eight to a tent, a bell tent, the ordinary soldiers, you know.
So, in your bell tent, would that be all experts and artsmen, or would it be...?
Yeah, it was. Well, there was the first lot there, like, you know. But then, you see, they moved about a bit. We moved to Dalkeith then, sort of thing, further over. But we was in tents all the time up there.
Now, you mentioned the recruits coming in the civilian clothes, and the mud and so on.
Terrible.
How long was it before you actually got these men looking like a group of soldiers? Did they get their kits?
Well, they got... that must have took a week or a fortnight, really, because the weather was bad, real bad, you know. But then they went to Dalkeith then, or Musselburgh. And a lot of them went down there. That's where most of the soldiers went and got training down there, sort of thing, you know. The Musselburgh, Dalkeith.
So what's, from your perspective, you know, being with these two officers... What were the NCOs and the officers trying to do with this bunch of raw recruits? What kind of training were they trying to do?
Well, trying to do the same what we had at Bedford, you know, really, you know.
But you were in a sea of mud.
But they couldn't do much at all must have been a bit of fortnight before they could do anything, really.
So what did they do?
All morning trying to get themselves sorted out. It took them quite a while to kit them out, really, you know. everybody.
Do any other recruits stand out from this period? Anybody you met at this stage?
Well, I say I knew most of them. Before we left in Musselburgh and that, because they used to hold dances and that, and people were getting out and mixing a bit more, sort of thing, you know. About something, and weather cleared up a bit before we went down south.
Now, you're a Scotsman who moved to London and then gone back up to Scotland. Most of your fellow Beds and Earths men were Southerners.
Yeah.
You were up in Scotland. Where were the intake from, generally? And it's a DLI, so...
Well, Northumbrian, really, that area, so on, you know.
So at this stage, they were mainly from...
North Scotland.
Mm-hmm. I mean, other veterans...
Nearly all Geordies.
Yeah. What about the language? Did you or your...
Well, I got on pretty well, really, you know, didn't have no problems, actually. They had more problems than me, someone.
What about your fellow Beds and Earths men? How did they deal with the dialect?
It took them a while, but they got over it, you got used to it, you know. It's in all mixed together, you know, we're all in the same boat sort of thing, you know.
Now, during this period, you were trained as a signaller, but obviously this new battalion, it wouldn't have had any specialist platoons.
No.
About how long did it take before they started organising the specialist platoons?
It took them a while to sort some of our fellas out that had passed the signals training, really, you know. And of course, then they were teaching, well, trying to teach the chaps that were coming in, you know. But that never went on much until we got down south, because they were just doing their basic training in Scotland, really, you know.
So during the time that you were in Edinburgh, or just outside of Edinburgh, you were just batman?
That's right, yeah.
Officers.
Yeah.
And how long did that last?
Until we moved south and realised that I was, because this is a cross flag, you start cross flags in the army, and I said, right, back in the signals. Well, then Gerlin knew I'd been a batman, so I was his batman for while we was in Folkestone. Done a lot of exercises with, I was a batman for him, because we used to go all night exercises down south and have to make his bed and his camp bed things and all this and look after it. But he was quite a nice bloke, I think.
And when did Lieutenant Gerlin, when did he join the battalion, do you think?
He joined in Scotland.
So he was up there in Scotland.
He was up in Scotland. But
and he was already, he was a trained signals officer. Yeah.
They must have realised that he was going to be the signals officer. And he must have come from Bransford, didn't he? And so I said, well, you can be my batman, he's a signaller. And that was how that happened. And then I think he, while we were down south, he became an adjutant, didn't he? Gerlin, wasn't he? And I think that's when I went dispatch riding.
Mm-hmm. Now, your first billet was in Bell Tents,
yeah.
Scotland. According to the battalion history, I think you moved to Dalkeith.
Yeah.
What were the...
Still in Bell Tents, yeah.
Still in Bell Tents at Dalkeith.
Yeah, I was in Bell Tents all the time. I was up Scotland, but you was. And I think when us batmen, we had a little bivvy tent in the end, you know, a small tent, like for two of you. Because then when we got down south, we had to... proper billets, I think it was Folkestone we went to, and we was in a barracks or something, yeah.
Do any of the NCOs, I mean, obviously you had these intakes of, you know, raw civilians, you had to be kind of whipped into shape. Who do you think were the key men, from your point of view, that were actually turning these men into soldiers? Does anybody stand out, any personalities stand out?
No, not really. Vic Rogers, is it Vic Rogers, was it? In one of them photos. He was a Bedford, he was a smart sergeant, and he'd done a lot up there. Vic, I forgot his name. Well known name.